Hi guys, this is Ronnie Fernandez, LCSW, and I'm here with Miguel Chavez, a fellow MSW, fellow clinician, therapist, and you know, me and Miguel, we first met when we worked at a previous agency, and we kind of hit it off, and I just thought it would be good to have a discussion on like man's mental health, but also as a clinician and also as just as a guy, you know, trying to, you know, and our first kind of experiences with therapy and so on, kind of understand how difficult, you know, trying to find a therapist is and the whole stigma around mental health. So Miguel, can you go ahead and tell us a little bit about you? And yeah, you can tell us a little bit about you.
Let's see. Well, I'm a Latino, Spanish speaking. My parents are from Mexico. They were born and raised in Zacatecas. They came here with a visa and then they stayed. They didn't go back. And they applied for residency here. And yeah, I have I was raised for the first about 7 years of my life in Watts. So my dad, he bought a house in Watts. I think it was like $20,000 when he first bought it in like the late 70s. Yeah. And I was like, Dad, why'd you buy a house in Watts? and he said, because of the price. It was a good price.
Makes sense.
So raised in Watts. And then from there, we moved to South LA. And that's like, South LA is weird because like now it used to be called South Central and then South LA. And now there's all these little districts. So now the area that I grew up in is called Firestone Park or Florence District. It's in that area right there. So yeah, so I grew up there, and then I went to college. You know, I survived the hood, and then I went to college, and then I decided, you know what, like what do I want to do? When I first started going to college, I majored in psychology, and then when I got my bachelor's, I was like, I don't really want to do a master's in psychology, which was disappointing to some of my peers.
Yeah,
but whatever. So I went into a social work program, and then from there, earned a, you know, master's degree in social work and then have 10 years of experience working, doing individual therapy, and school-based, as well as in the home, for nonprofits. And now I'm working in private practice. So doing, victims of crime. So I do take victims of crime cases.
Wow. Yeah, man. I mean, and I just thought it would be just such a really great conversation, and you know, it's just a different perspective, you know, where we don't come off as like, oh, we're professionals and we know, you know, what to do. It's like, no, we're kind of trying to figure this out too, and we've had experiences that a lot of people might have. So, and I kind of want to hear about your first your first experience with therapy, man, and how that went.
Oh, let's see. So the first time I was 19 years old.
Okay? Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. So I was 19 years old, and I was in community college. So I went to El Camino and they say it's 2 years, but it's never 2 years. Well,
yeah.
It wasn't 2 years. It was like two and a half, and then it turned into three.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, three. So I was at Elco. Great, great school. I really liked it. I like going to El Camino. And during that time, so to give you some context around why I ended up going to seek it, so it was my oldest brother. So my oldest brother, he suffers from schizophrenia, and it's like this paranoid schizophrenia. So I guess depending on the episode or what the symptoms look like, he could be diagnosed with either paranoid schizophrenia or like bipolar with psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like, it could look like mania, but then you have this, you know, complete, you know, psychosis going on here.
Wow.
Where he like thinks of stuff that like, thinks that you did something or the people are after him. It's a sense of paranoia.
Yeah.
And so during that time, and we had seen my brother develop into like multiple illnesses. When I was in high school, this was like 11th grade. My brother showed signs of like OCD and like deep, what is it like? So it was like a really deep phase of depression that he went to. It was major depression. So from there, it started progressing because he started, doing substances to self, to take care of himself.
Yeah. You see that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So he did do a lot of that. And so it was around that time when I was like 19 and I was going to community college where his episodes were getting very, very aggressive, aggressive towards family members. So he had, you know, it was physical aggression towards like, he even, Hit my mom, my dad as well, left stitches on my dad's face.
Wow.
And so it was like this really, really tense environment that was like, I had to go to school, like I'm studying. But then when I get home, I got this, you know, my oldest brother who's he has a large frame, and, you know, and he's telling me, all accusing me of all these things, you know, and he's angry about it, and he wants to fight me.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
So we got into a physical fight. Another time, I'll tell you the details around that fight, because that in itself can be traumatic for people to listen
to.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
So we got into a fight, and then that's when I realized, you know what? Like I'm not well. Like, my mind, I'm like, I was very tense,
yeah.
You know, all my muscles, and I didn't even feel like studying. And I got to this period where me harming someone else was something that had never really crossed my mind.
Wow.
And to top it off, it was like your own blood, your own brother, someone that you looked up to, someone that you care about, someone that you love. And here you are, you're having these really dark thoughts about hurting someone that you love.
Yeah.
You know? Oh. Yeah. And I was like,
yeah.
I was like, man, like, I need to go see somebody. And I knew that the student health services provided about, I think it was like 6 or 7 sessions that were free. It was based on the fee that then we paid, like a student health services fee. So I went to the website and I saw that I could, you know, I could make an appointment. And before that, I had never thought about, you know, going. But this one was like I was at this point where, like, I guess physical aggression or the risk of violence was really high for me towards other people. Me being a perpetrator of aggression.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized, you know what? I need some help. So yeah, I went in. I went in for my first time at El Camino College.
Wow. And how was that experience?
So it was, you know, before going in, there was this, my family had always had this idea of, like, you know, if you're crazy, those are the people that go seek therapy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we had out in, it was, I suppose that was also perpetrated in our family, because my older brother was mentally ill, and we thought, okay, he's the one that needs the help. I don't need the help, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's that part that, you know, even though we're going through all this trauma, you know, and these experiences, we don't think like, oh, we need some help, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You start telling, no, oh, he needs some help, you know?
Yeah.
But you don't think that you need help until you get, you know, until you reach your peak. So for me, the peak was, you know, I felt like, you know, committing violence against another individual.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yeah, I need to go see somebody. So it was, so before I went in, I didn't, obviously, male supply, the supply of male therapists is not very high.
Yeah.
And so I got a female therapist. It was a white lady. And I was very nervous the first time I went in, but it felt really good, because it was the first time that I spoke to someone who was outside of the family.
Yeah.
That could, you know, that could really, like, you know, listen to me, and at the same time, like, I never had that, because it was always like my mom was like my go-to person all the time, and so it was like, okay, now we have this professional. But I also had this sense of hope, because I had this you know, as a young Latino from the hood, you have this kind of misconception, or maybe like a bias that the white folks are going to help you with it no more. They're more educated.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the help was going to come. And I was like, you know, let's go. Yeah. So it was good. It felt good to get a lot off my chest. I talked about, you know, that incident that I had with my brother. I talked about my brother's history, and I went back a few more times too. And after that first one, it felt really good. Like, I was still tense, but at the same time, there was a follow-up meeting. So that made me feel good too.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm going to come back and I'm going to see her again. But as the sessions progressed, like, my level of the level of aggression or the level of intensity that I was feeling had gone down. So there was also this side of, like, you know, me telling myself, oh, I don't need this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
So ultimately, it was really up to me to cut off the sessions. I think I cut it off at, like, session number 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think sometimes we think that we're going to be in therapy for years, you know, and you know, especially with myself, like, I try to get people out, I mean, not as soon as possible, but just, you know, it's always my goal is to transition them out, you know, and not having professional services. And it's, and what, And how was that experience? I mean, going down, you know, you're done with it. Did you go back, or did you feel like it was a, looking back, was it that a good experience as far as like having only four sessions, or do you think that you should have went more? Or,
well, the expectations around what I wanted to get out of it were also kind of like unknown. I didn't know. I didn't know. It's like I'm walking in, but I don't know what I'm going to get out of it. I don't know, like, where is that end point? You know, it's like you start, but then where's the end point? Even for therapists, that's also sometimes, you know, difficult to identify, to define. So for me, it was the how do you say, the physiological effects of, like, that tension and that kind of shakiness and that anxiety that was really high. For me, that was the defining factor. It's like, if that dissipates, then maybe I don't need this anymore. That was, you know, that's my ignorance too, you know, going in there.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, yeah, I don't need this anymore. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, which I really did. But, you know, there was also this limit too of the number of sessions.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, I knew I had to cut it off. And then the advice that was coming my way was also not what I expected. So I was surprised as well, because keep in mind, so at that age, I'm like 19. So there in right here in America, there's this idea that after 18 that you're going to be independent. You can do anything you want. So there was also this kind of energy that I was feeling from the therapist saying that, like, hey, you're an adult. Why don't you just move out and let your parents deal with those problems? You know?
Huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was hard to follow. Yeah.
Yeah. That, wow.
Yeah, she wasn't the only one. She wasn't the only one. There were other people, other mental health professionals, like, you know, even a psychiatrist that I had spoken to around that time, because I was looking for help, you know?
Yeah.
Not just for me, but it was like, I wanted to help my brother. I wanted to help my family. Like, I'm not going to abandon my family. Like, I'm coming across the border, you know? And it's like,
yeah.
And they work hard, and I love my family, and I'm not just going to abandon my family because I'm 19 and I could, you know?
And do you think it was a cultural thing?
Definitely. There's a clash of cultures. Yeah. Yeah, because they didn't understand that I was going to stay, you know, it was like, and I had a younger sister, so she was like 4 or 5 years younger than me.
Yeah.
And I knew that my sister, like, I needed to be there for her and to protect her as well. And kind of try to, like, you know, make the situation better, not just for myself, but for the rest of my family and for my brother as well.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, I know now that we, you know, it's kind of drained into us. That we need to be more, you know, we need to have, like, be aware of culture and how that works. Because I don't think now, I'm hoping that wouldn't happen, right? I mean, I know that.
Still can, though, you know, let's be real.
Yeah, no, especially when, you know, especially you have somebody that's kind of like only psychotherapy, and they're going to sit down and assess you and, like, okay, this is what you got to do. Because, I mean, I think it's easy to say, like, once you see something on paper, you kind of know, okay, to get better, you need to do this, this, and this. But, you know, but the work part is how are you going to get there, right? I mean, right. I think pretty much the first day you can kind of like, okay, you need to do this. But you know what I'm saying? Like, but there's a whole journey in the middle of that. You know what I'm
saying? Oh, yeah. That wasn't going to happen in my free sessions. You know, in my 6%. And I think that was the part that was lacking, because I didn't really gain any insight into, like, myself or even me as a client. It was always, I walked in with that perspective of my brother's the client. My brother's the one who needs to help. You know, it's like, not me. I'm here to help my brother, you know?
Yeah.
But I didn't also get that reflection of, like, you know, could it be that, you know, that you're also traumatized from this, you know? Do you have anxiety? Is there depression that comes, you know? And those are things that, you know, at that, in my first time, it wasn't explored, or it wasn't something that even that was coming out. So for me, after that, I was fine, right? after my four sessions, I was like, I don't need therapy anymore.
It's
like,
yeah, especially after such a traumatic experience. I mean, now, I mean, I'm pretty sure, like, back then, you're probably like, oh, it's just, I got in a fight with my brother. But, you know, as a professional, you kind of see, like, wow, how much of an impact that had on you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, looking back, I mean, and it was deeper than that, because even the area, the socioeconomic status area that I came from, was also had very high rates of violence. Like, you know, I saw, like, gang members getting courted into the gang right in front of my yard. You know, there were shootings that were also taking place because the neighbors were, that was a location for one of the headquarters of one of the gangs. And so the opposing gang members would swing by and shoot, and they're not always going to, aim like directly only at that one house. It's usually maybe before and also after. And so when we had moved into the house, we knew there were some dangers moving into the house. We saw some bullet holes that were patched up in the wall. So, coming from an environment like that, you look back and you're like, wow, like it didn't start with my brother. Like it was way before that.
And it's nor and for for people that come from, the same kind of background, man, that stuff kind of seemed kind of normal. Like, oh, that's just kind of the way it is. And oh, it's not. And we don't really see how it brings that irritability. It brings those symptoms of depression. And it kind of teaches us to violence is the way you deal with things, I think we find out later, like, no, there's so many things that that you can do outside of violence, outside of intimidation, that kind of stuff, and learning new skills, especially when you go out of your environment, especially to college, right? I mean, you can't.
Yeah, it's a different environment because when you step out of that environment, and then you go to like a college environment, which is more peaceful, you do feel safe. There is a completely different, thing that you have to adapt to that new environment, and that's not easy to adapt to when you're coming from. People that are using like the N-words as just as the Latinos, talking to themselves. My friends, we would all use N-words to talk to each other, it was, those were things. And looking back, there was a lot of racism too that was ingrained into the messages or the songs or even rhymes that, when we were children, growing up in other environments.
Yeah. And even like, one thing I found out is like even eye contact, right? I mean, yeah. I remember like navigating through East LA, man. I mean, my head was down the whole time when I was walking, in the streets and stuff like that. And then if I knew that somebody wanted my attention, I knew like, okay, I had the posture up. And then if they become a little more aggressive, I know I need to smile. Like, hey, So I knew like the whole kind of routine to kind of get me out of that. But when you go to college and that friendly environment, you can't walk around with your head down, or when you talk to, one of your professors or something like that, you can't. Because it comes off as weak, it comes off as like not caring. And even at, when you grow up and to become more professional, where you need to have that good, a good handshake and the eye contact. But yeah, that adjustment is difficult.
Yeah. So, I was thinking about, that session and the first time that I went to therapy. And then I really needed more therapy looking back.
Yeah.
So that wasn't enough, but I didn't know that at the time. So I just continued up, my goal was I needed to get through college, because when I was in high school, that's what the teachers were all saying. You got to go to college. You got to go to college. You got to graduate, get a degree. And so that was it. I was on this path where like nothing was going to stop me. I was going, I was going to college. And so after El Camino, I went to Cal State Dominguez Hills, and there were more episodes that my brother had. Aside from that, it didn't, I mean, obviously, my brother's mental illness didn't stop when my therapy services stopped.
Yeah.
And so all throughout my college years, I had to kind of balance that stress of my brother getting 5150'd, probably easily more than a dozen times in his life. And this was all throughout my college life. And I was a part of some of those because I had to communicate with the people on the phone. And so I was doing the calls to, to the pet team and that.
Oh, what happened? I lost you. Wow.
For him. Okay. Yeah.
You just missed you for the last 2 minutes.
Yeah. It says connection unstable on there.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. So a lot of stuff going on between you and your brother, and how, yeah, you're right, man. Four sessions is not gonna do much, yeah. Right?
I mean, not because not only because of that, but then you got to think. I go back to the same environment,
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Wow. But I was still, gung ho. I'm going to college, and I did, and I lived at home. Financially, it worked out. I was on, financial aid during the whole time. All the years that I went through college, except for grad school, there's no, the financial aid isn't free. That's what I mean by financial aid. It wasn't a loan. Yeah. So when I went to grad school, my brother was still going through these phases in and out of, these rehab centers. There was domestic violence still. It was still happening at home, but a little bit less. Cause he started getting older as well.
Yeah.
And at the same time, my brother was also releasing a lot of, I would say internal turmoil, like these really, Yeah, a lot of stuff that, because he was abused physically. And so I think a lot of that was part of his release from his experiences. And wow. And so, yeah, going through college, I was like, it was like this experience of like, have health insurance, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then at the same time, I knew that the college experience was only going to be a few sessions. So I was like in grad school, and I knew I could get a few sessions, but there was never this really opportunity to get a full therapy, like even psychiatry at that point either, because that wasn't even a topic when I went in for at El Camino or anything like that.
Yeah.
For myself. Yeah. So, I mean, so I went through all these years because, you know, I didn't have health insurance. I was already like phased out of my dad's health insurance. And then at the same time, the universities, I knew it was only a few sessions. So there was a part of me that didn't want those few sessions because I didn't want to be disappointed with it because it was the first time. And yeah. And I think maybe that first time, the disappointment of like, hey, you need to move out, you know, let your family take care of these problems. That also kind of like, it really had an impact on me.
Yeah.
Probably subconsciously, I didn't want to go back to hear that same message, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's interesting how they just, wow. Yeah. Cause I wouldn't think, and maybe cause those are short term, was it what they call short term?
Right. Short term. Yeah. Solution focus. Just
solution, you know, focus.
Here's
there
the
go.
Problem.
Yeah.
Problem.
Yeah, here you go.
Here's the
here you go.
Solution.
Boom. And that's, and I think that's, like I was saying, like, I think that's easy to do. Like you can kind of see what the issues are, but you kind of need that guidance through it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not just going to be solved. Like, just because you know the answer doesn't mean you're going to, you know, everything's going to get fixed. It's not, it's a process, you know? So, wow. And how did that kind
of, I went back just to let you know.
Yeah.
Oh, I went
yeah,
back
okay.
to therapy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did go back, and it wasn't until I got my, it was my first job, after I graduated with my social work degree. And, you know, I had health insurance.
Yeah.
It was like, I had it before when I went to Medi-Cal as well. So I worked in Medi-Cal for some time, but that was during a time where I was doing my internship for grad school, and they wouldn't allow me to cut, you know, the days that I needed. They wanted me to stay 5 days, or eventually by me being absent, I would get fired. So I had to quit my position from Medi-Cal. So that's fine. And I didn't use, and that was about 6 months. So I didn't use my insurance. I didn't take that opportunity to, because I didn't think that was going to happen. You know, I thought that I was just going to continue to work in Medi-Cal. I enjoyed the position there, and the money was great because it was the first time that I was earning, you know, I spent a lot of time like in-home tutoring and also as a teacher assistant. So that was like, you know, $10 an hour salary back then. And then, you know, going to Medi-Cal was like 17 or so. And so that was a big, economically, it was more I could do, and I was happy with it. So it wasn't until I got my first job with my degree that I was able to like, you know, really focus and go to therapy. A different journey that I'm like, you know what? I need it again. I know I need it. I know I've needed it since I was a kid, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I never went. And the first one wasn't good enough. So I was like, and here I am again in my life. And I was like, I'm about to fail again. Not again, but this is the first time where, like, this is a professional environment, my job. I wasn't fulfilling my duties. And it was because of, I still had all this stuff going on. My brother's stuff was still happening, you know?
Wow.
And I was still processing, you know, everything that was going on. So I remember I told my boss, I said, you know what? I need to take some time off. And I was honest. And I told him what was going on. And he said, that's okay. I'll support whatever you need. Take time off. And so so I went to Kaiser. So Kaiser, that's the location that I went for therapy. And yeah, it was a lot better. It was a lot more enriching, changed my life, I would say.
Wow.
Yeah. There's no way to describe it. It's hard to really put it all into words, but really it was the greatest thing that ever happened in my life.
What was the difference?
Well, aside from the fact that there was no, you know, the session limit wasn't there. Hmm. They were listening to me, and there was a lot more feedback about myself. And the diagnosis was also shared with me as well. You know, diagnosing yourself, you know, it's a little bit different, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. But when you see it, it's almost like you want to hear it from someone else, you know, this diagnosis. I'm pretty sure that there's some therapists out there that think that, I've diagnosed myself. I know myself, you know? And
yeah.
And it's like, no, it's different when you actually see the diagnosis from another mental health professional about yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more, how do you say, like you learn more about yourself. It's enlightening in a certain way.
Yeah.
It's frustrating, but it's enlightening.
Yeah, because it's, I think, I don't know, man. I mean, I think as a therapist and even being in therapy, like, and learning how to do therapy, of the skill of sitting with the person when they're talking and not just trying to think about the answer, what they need. Because the answer is not, I don't think it's that important. I think the most important thing is the journey. And I think people struggle to sit down, to kind of sit with them. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? And go on that journey. It's like, because if you go on that journey, you don't know where it's going to end. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't know what the end result is. So it's scary for both of you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if that makes sense, but just
Oh
kind of
yeah,
like,
it does make sense. And I think I was as I'm thinking right now, the other thing that was helpful was that she actually the therapist that I went to Kaiser
just talked about Kaiser. What happened? Yeah, so come on, there we go. All right, you were just talking about
Okay.
Kaiser.
Yeah, so I think another thing that was helpful about this Kaiser therapist was that she looked into my background and my environment that I grew up in, and she was the one that I had identified that these things are not normal, that these things that you went through, that is traumatic, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean,
Everybody
it's
goes through that in the neighborhood, you know, the hear the gunshots and stuff like that, you think that's normal. And then someone tells you that's not normal, and that has impacts on you.
yeah.
Yeah. And so it was, she taught me a lot about myself. You know, it was very, and for me, the gender didn't matter either, whether it was a male or a female. You know, that
Yeah.
wasn't an issue. For me, it was just, but can you listen to me really? You know, it's like, are you going to understand me?
Yeah. And I think my experiences with therapists has been kind of rocky at best. I just had one for about a year now. And it was a guy that it's a guy therapist. And I think for me and my needs, I think that's what I needed. And the therapist before, when I first started, I think it was just a couple of sessions, but at that moment, like that's what I needed. I kind of needed to get like, just so that you just need to get like a mind shift. You know what I mean? It was just a lot of stuff going on, and then he just kind of gave me like a lot of information just to kind of change my thought pattern, and that was good for that at that time. You know, it was just kind of like, okay, I'm good. But then I don't know. It's been kind of rocky. It's been rocky, but I think it's a journey where you have to figure out who's the best fit for you. Because sometimes gender matters, it doesn't. Sometimes, you know, how many years and the type of therapy really matters. And but I wanted to ask you, do you think with your brother, is that what kind of got you in the path of becoming a therapist?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was so I remember it was like 11th grade. And in senior year, you had to select. There was an elective, and I remember they had psychology as an elective. And I took that class because I was very interested in figuring out, understanding my brother and understanding what he, at that time, it was OCD that he was suffering from. And it was severe because it was getting to the point where it wasn't just him doing these repetitions and obsessions, it was him wanting the family members to also be coordinated with his obsessions as well. So the, you know, taking steps back wasn't just him. It was also, can you two also do that while I take my steps back? You know? Yeah, it was getting pervasive where he wanted the family members to also be, you know,
Wow, we lost you again. So good.
all these things going on.
Okay. Wow. Sorry, you were out there for like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, wow. And how, so bringing
So
everything
at the
together.
time, so going back to your question, yes, that was the key. That was what ended up, you know, bringing me into the field.
Wow. Man, that's how's your relationship now? Sorry. Hello?
You there?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, sorry. How is your relationship now?
Oh, You know, it's actually really good with my brother. He's actually, he made tremendous progress. I had never in my life would have thought that, you know, that he would be stable. Let's be honest. Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. So he's doing, so you guys have a better relationship now, and what would you say to somebody that's kind of going through the similar experience where they have, you know, have a family member that has a mental illness, and you know, like what advice would you give?
Well, you know, it's gonna sound cliche, but you know, the idea of not giving up, you know, really, because you know, I did give up. I gave up on my brother because I lost hope. You know, when you lose hope, you lose a lot. But it wasn't me that kept it moving. It was my mom, actually. My mom was the one that didn't lose hope, and she pushed forward, and she made some changes to even the environment that we lived in. She was the one that said, you know what, maybe we should move into the different environment, because this was a home in South LA that I grew up in, and my dad had purchased a home in Santa Ana, which is, you know, the hood of Orange County. But my mom wanted to try it out, and so definitely that was a significant thing, is getting out of that environment where the access to drugs was there, and also the history of the abuse that my brother endured was also in that house in Los Angeles. So you know, there was a lot of things where, like, you know, just switching the environment into a better one was really helpful. In addition to, of course, all the times that he had gone in and psychotropic medication that he was taking, you know, all that combined. So it was a lot of factors, but I would say that the one that put the nail in the coffin in the end was my mom making that decision to move to Santa Ana from Los Angeles.
Dude, that's wow. Yeah, no, I'm just kind of in awe about it. Like, 'cause once you think, you know, once I hear schizophrenia and all these diagnoses, like you think that it's gonna last forever. You know what I mean? Like, and that's what, you know, before I got into this field, that's what I thought. But you're saying that, how do you not like get into that anger, bitter place? You know what I'm saying? 'Cause I think you kind of talked about that before. You know, that's kind of like how the irritability, how were you able to kind of recognize that?
You know, recognize the irritability that I was feeling, you mean?
Yeah, 'cause I think with guys, we tend to go in these like rabbit holes, right? Where, you know, and we often do that with our wives, you know what I mean? Like, and we isolate and we think she's the worst person in the world, and we think of all the messed up things that she's done. And so I think in your case, and what you were talking about, you could have easily did that with your brother. And easily just said, I'm done with this dude. Like, that's it. Like, what kept you kind of from not going there?
You know, I did go there, you know, as well. But, you know, I think that one of the things that held me back was, I would say family values has a big part of it. And growing up, the values that my mom and my dad both instilled in the family, and how much fun we had together as well growing up. See, because he didn't have his mental illness until he was about like 18, 17 or 18 or so. And so before that, I mean, it was like the typical, you know, like a brother. I mean, it was like there's five of us. Okay, so he's my oldest one, and I'm the youngest one in the family. Yeah, and in between there's three of them. And so we all like have these very fond memories growing up. And I looked up to him, and he loved art, and he was into graffiti, and I would admire his artwork. And so there was this love and the value that my parents had instilled that. Out of this house and just leave them the way they are. Like, this is not okay. And so there was this kind of push, like, you know, it's gonna happen, you know. So this attitude of being a fighter and not giving up.
Wow, man, it's just, thank you for sharing, man. I mean, that's not, we don't talk about these things, right? We don't talk about our family members' mental illness and the impact on us, and how it affects us, and how we don't get, how, you know, how not to get into that ugly rabbit hole, you know, of like, I'm done with you, this is it, you know. And I'm pretty sure you might have even said that, and I who would
Oh
blame you, right?
yeah, I had my points. Yeah, where I was like, I want to hurt him.
Yeah, but
Yeah.
just by you recognizing that, by you being able to kind of identify that. That's pretty incredible, because a lot of times we don't recognize. We kind of just say, it's, you know, we'll get over it. It's whatever. And then, you know, we start drinking and stuff, and then, you know, then we come to blows, man. So, yeah, I mean, I think what we talked about earlier too, is just kind of like identifying like the symptoms, identifying like, how am I feeling? Checking in with yourself. Did you do any meditation at that time? Did you do any like just reflection? Like, how were you able to get that kind of perspective?
You know, one of the things that, you know, cause I didn't get like the full treatment until I was already like, you know, like 28 or so.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So that was when I went to Kaiser. And so really, before that, my, you know, there's other, how do you say, ways of coping. I'll give you the PG-13 ones, but yeah. You know, that's for another discussion.
Yeah.
But you know, one of the things that really helped out was exercising. So I had an uncle who was like, who we admired a lot, and he lived with us. And my uncle would lift weights, and he would work out. He would like, he's the type of guy that would be like running on the train tracks and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. So he was like, he was pumped, and we were like, we thought he was the strongest dude on the planet.
Yeah.
And we loved him. And so I would see him work out, and I started to also become interested in that. And so he left his weightlifting bench, the belt, and the weights in the backyard. And so I started to use them, and I realized that it felt so relaxing, and at the same time empowering and strength, and it gave me motivation and energy. It was almost like an antidepressant right there that my uncle left me. And so that was really one of the biggest things that helped me throughout all those years to manage the stress.
Yeah, I think we undervalue the importance of exercise and working out. Like it's a huge deal. Like if you know, we were talking earlier before, it's like, look, and I you know, with the whole like corona thing and not being able to go out, it's like, man, I need to go ahead and start walking, at least start walking, start some exercise, because I'm not feeling as much energy. I'm feeling a little more irritable. Like, I need to start doing stuff. And those little little interventions, how much they help, you know. And starting off with the basic stuff, you know, make sure you're showering, make sure you know you go for that walk. But starting off there, I think that's very important, just kind of like way to start.
Yeah, there's a meme that I saw that someone posted, and I think it said something like, exercise is the most underrated antidepressant. And I was like, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was doing some reading, some research and stuff. I got a book on that, and it's important, man. They're saying like, you know, for, you know, if you're feeling those symptoms of depression, you should at least go 3 times a week, 45 minutes, just walking. Just, that's how you start. And I was like, really? Like, it's like, that makes sense. Like, it's just simple, you know?
Right.
And you start off from there, and then it, like, if you're not feeling better, you're not good enough, then you go on to more things. So, so yeah, man, I just want to thank you, man, for sharing and such a great story and beneficial for a lot of people that are going through, you know, not just, your brother with the mental illness, but also with, you know, growing up in that environment, you know, and how once we leave and how different it is out there, right?
So. Yeah, I you know, looking back, incredibly hard. But I think like even before we started, you know, talking, I had mentioned how, you know, just going back to this attitude of gratefulness, you know, I'm really grateful for a lot of things, you know, and that attitude of just not giving up, that was, I still have that.
So yeah.
I'm very, like, if I put my mind to it, like, we're going to do it. You know, it's like,
yeah,
with some of the goals I have, even if it's brutal, even if it's like, you know, if I have to sacrifice a lot, you know, we're going to get it done. You know?
Yeah. Cause if you come out of that environment, man, you definitely have that toughness in you. You know what I mean? And being able to kind of analyze, okay, everybody's going this way and I need to go that way. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you kind of get that awareness of like, what's going on. Like, hey, maybe I shouldn't do that, cause I know where that's going to lead. And I know, like, to achieve a goal, like, man, it's going to be a lot of obstacles, but to be able to graduate from college and grad school and get licensed, like, that didn't even seem like the hardest part for me, you know. It was more like navigating through everything, man.
You know, sometimes people forget that those really negative experiences that you have in life, when you overcome them, you know, or when you go through those and you come out, you know, with, you know, better, a stronger person, there's that resilience that really builds, that ability to bounce back. And sometimes you say, you know, you stress out about these small things right now, like, oh, my Wi-Fi router, you know, is out. And you gotta remember, man, like, I've been through much worse, you know, in my life.
And that's why, and I mean, this is the reason why I started this podcast and I started interviewing people, is because I felt that there was like a narrative kind of going on of like, oh, this is trauma and this is bad, and oh, this is like, no, I think once you overcome things, you know, just like when you're a baby and you start walking, right? You're not going to just get up and start sprinting across the living room, right? You're going to fall, you're going to get up, you're going to learn how to walk, and you get stronger and stronger, right? I think it's the same thing when we're facing tough challenges, you
Yeah,
know?
I think a lot of people, like, I've talked to, like, a lot of my cousins and some of the ones that were involved in gang life and thug life, you know, in Compton. And one of the things that I see that they have a hard time seeing is their own strengths, their own gifts, like the things that they're good at. I'm like, dude, primo, like, you're really good at this, like. And some of them, they don't. It's hard for them to see that, you know.
It really is, man. I mean, I can name so many people that are smarter than me, that were more athletic, that were more like, you know,
They have talent, they have
just
potential.
super talent, man. And that it's just what you kind of see. You know, you see a lot of people that, I don't know, man, that I guess that haven't succeeded at that point. You know what I'm saying? And you think that, oh, well, nobody's gonna do it. That's just the way we are. That's just the way things are. We're not gonna be able to get our, you know, we're not gonna be able to go to college. We don't do that. And it's just, no, man. Like, it's a crazy, it's a different way of thinking, you know. But super talented people that just weren't able to kind of like get that confidence, because I know they had it.
Well, we look at the environment, and, you know, and some of that doesn't help, you know, where the talent was there, but the environment didn't provide for those, you know, things to even shine. So then, you know, they're dealing with this whole other mess, you know, of issues that kind of take away from the strengths that they had. And, you know, some of my cousins that now that they're older, they're, you know, they know they're, you know, they're realizing some of those strengths. And to me, that's wonderful that, you know, that's being realized, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's, I don't know why I'm thinking of just like genuine praise, like the importance of that, of not trying to BS somebody and like, oh, that's a great art thing. No, it's not. Like, it's not, it's not. Because they need to understand, like, but you're really good at this. You hear me saying? So what your words have, you know, like, you're just not, you know, just saying, oh, that's awesome. Like, no, you need to be like, no, Matt, it's okay, but I need you to, you know, I think if you try harder, man, it's going to get even better. You know, something where you're not BSing somebody and they can tell. Because I remember, like, as a kid, man, it was a lot of this kind of like, you're awesome, that's great. It's like, no, it's not. You know, sometimes you need to say, like, it's bad.
I'm into, like, building each other up as men, you know, in a very genuine fashion, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you want to be encouraging, you know, absolutely. But you also want to give, when you give somebody praise, like, your word means something. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's okay to say, I think you need to work harder on that, man. I think if you work harder on that, it'll be so much better. Like, that's fine. You know, you don't want to say that's terrible, right? But you want
Gonna bring them down either,
yeah,
although that's very easy to do, you know.
you don't want to do that. But you want to be like, you know, but just be honest, you know, what they're really good at, so you have some value in what you say. So I don't know, man, but I think we can talk about this for a long time. I think there's definitely more discussions that we'll have together, because because we're not, you know, guys, especially Latino guys, we're not talking about this type of stuff, on what we've been through and how those environmental factors, you know, come into play when you get older, and when you get older, you know, when you start developing into an adult. So I think there's some more conversations there, man.
Oh yeah,
Yeah, man.
definitely.
Well, thank you for your time, man. And we'll definitely do this again, man. And
Awesome. Thanks for
thanks,
inviting
man.
me. It's first timer.
Yeah, man. I know, it's just awesome. I really appreciate it, bro.
Awesome. Thanks.